Hello and welcome to Soft Spoken, a podcast by yours truly, Marfine Chan. I am your host, as you well know. And welcome to those of you who are returning, who have subscribed, who have liked the podcast, and have followed the podcast, whether that's on Spotify or Apple or your favorite podcast platform. This is the 8th episode, and so welcome. Also, if you are new, if you are just tuning in for maybe the first time, of course, you don't really have to go back and listen to the very first episode up until now, but, you know, Soft Spoken is really a podcast for me to channel my curiosity, my ramblings, my randomness, and a particular subject or prompt or idea or topic that I happen to be interested in a particular month. And this month, it's April, it's Cambodian New Year, so I've been busy with the Cambodian community here, organizing that and bringing some celebrations to the public. And so I was also thinking about the idea, you know, I've touched on a number of topics in my past episodes about self-care and work in the abstract sort of societal sense, social sense. I've touched on listening to your body and nature. And so I decided this time around I'd mix it up and bring in a special guest to interview. In this particular episode, it's my friend Randy Kim, who is a queer Viet Cambodian American and the producer and the founder, I guess you can call him, the person behind the mic for the Banh Mi Chronicles podcast, which has been a podcast that has become really popular. And it covers and interviews a number of Asian American notables across the country, and you know, authors, activists, and people of that nature. You know, I happened to be a guest on that podcast a few years ago, I believe. And so I highly encourage you to find that podcast, to listen to it, and to follow Randy Kim on social media. He's a great guy, and I think you'll really like our conversation, which really centered around, you know, both him and I are really public people on social media and in our own ways. And for him and for our conversation, it's centered on, you know, how do we manage public life, publicity, and with that, you know, doing some self-care and managing and preventing burnout. I think many of you will like this episode and this interview and connect to it. And so I hope that you enjoy. And without further ado, here is my interview with Randy Kim. Hey everyone, so I'm here with my good friend Randy Kim from the Banh Mi Chronicles, but also a recently donned the sort of master's title he got a master's in, I forgot, what was it again?
In nonprofit management.
And so him and I are going to have some conversation around that because as some of you know, I work in the nonprofit and advocacy world. And so congratulations on that, Randy, and congratulations on your success as a podcaster. I loved seeing the news that you were going to this conference or that conference and receiving awards for your podcast, which is in its 8th season, I believe.
Yeah, that is correct. It's hard to believe that I've been in this arena for the past 4 years, nearly 4 years already. So yeah, thank you for bringing me on.
For people who don't really know you quite yet, or you know, have earmarked your bookmarked your podcast, and have heard about you, but don't really know you as much as I do, your history, your story, and you know, share a little bit with folks, you know, your why. Why do you do what you do? Why do you think about the way the things that you do, and about the change that you want to create? So what is your story? What are your experiences? And just give people sort of like a little bit of background into the human being.
Yeah, I love this. For my whys, the reason why I did my podcast, or the reason why I do my podcast, and the reason why I do the work that I do, public facing, whether it's with the Cambodian Museum, whether it's with nonprofit, or through speaking to universities. I did this as a love letter to my younger version of myself, to the 10-year-old self that never got to learn about the history of Asian American folks, to the 15-year-old self that learned about how Asians were considered the villains of our history, whether it's through the Vietnam War or World War II with the Japanese, to the 18-year-old self that struggled in his first year as a journalism student and not having a mentor, to that 22 to 23-year-old self working as an intern at a TV station where everyone was predominantly white, and I could not find a role model that was Asian American to help me navigate through this very difficult field in journalism in the media industry. So, and the 25-year-old self that struggled with queerness. So I do these to think about the times that I have been at my lowest point in my life, where I have struggled to find acceptance, where I have struggled to find belonging in any of these spaces. And so I do my work because I feel it's important for people to feel that they belong somewhere and that they belong in any space that they deserve to be in. It's certainly something that I think about when I talk to folks, to my guests, to my audiences, to different spaces, and how can I do this as part of my healing? How can I do this to heal these younger versions of myself that was very tormented for a long time, that had the self-hating Asian and queer phobia that I was having of myself, that it took me until I was almost 30 years old, and I'm going to be 40 in another month or so, but it would take me into like my early 30s for me to actually unlearn a lot of that toxicity that I was holding on to for so long, because of the way society had saw me as a queer Asian American. So that is certainly the big part of my why, is to unlearn and to love the younger versions of myself that wasn't feeling loved. And I'm hoping that people can see themselves in these stories and that they can unlearn and to love themselves, you know, do the stories that they hear.
Yeah. And so we'll jump right into it. You know, soft spoken, as I mentioned to you during our conversation about having you on this podcast, is really soft-spoken in an abstract sense, soft-spoken living, soft-spoken, the stereotype about Asians being soft-spoken and or quiet, and why that isn't a bad thing, but, you know, Asian Americans aren't just quiet. And so soft-spoken is I talk about it in a very abstract way. And so in having you on this show, I was sort of wondering, you know, who can I have on this show as my first guest who, you know, understands what it means to be a public persona, who understands how in being in the public, there can be some standards set for a person to be at this level, 150, 200% all the time, producing content, producing new ideas, or engaging in this conversation or that conversation. So in your rise to fame, I guess you can call it, in your becoming a public persona, especially following the Stop Asian Hate movement, you know, how have you managed the publicity and have sort of taken care of the human behind the public persona?
I think that's a wonderful question that you've asked. I don't think anyone's asked me that question before. Being in the podcasting world for the past several years has been a very exhausting one. If I have to be very frank, most of the podcasting work that I've done has been during the pandemic. It's been virtual. So I feel like I've been living in this weird bubble for the past 3 years, three out of the 4 years since working on the podcast. And I think when you are working on a show that's virtual, you are stuck in that bubble. And it's kind of hard to get out of that bubble sometimes. That bubble would be like, do people actually want to listen to me? I think that bubble also has intensified a lot of my imposter syndrome, I think. Because I often feel as if, is podcasting work actually moving the needle to spark the conversations that I'm hoping would happen? Am I a person, as a podcast host, able to see the impact that's being made through that platform? I don't know if I have a really good answer to this part, because I do struggle with imposter syndrome quite a bit. I've dealt with it when I was a storyteller in the physical spaces. I often wonder, am I doing the right thing? Am I actually making impact from my stories? Is the stories that I'm telling creating more work for myself? And sometimes that has transferred into the podcasting work. I often wonder, am I doing the best job of honoring these stories? Am I able to build the kind of connections that I want with my guests, which I've been very thankful for. So I believe that what it really came down to, I don't know if I'm answering your question, but it is often a struggle to have a platform where people do see your work. And for me, I try very hard not to go into this people-pleasing way of doing my work, because I feel like if I start going in that direction, then I'm really pleasing no one. I feel that when I start to work with my guest, I have to be my authentic self. I have to invest in being able to know the backstories and also to know the whys of my work in order to achieve the authenticity of my work, but also to achieve the respect of my audiences. I think what I also try to avoid is not get so preoccupied by what my followers think. I try not to get preoccupied about what do I think my followers would want to hear from me? I have to be in my authentic self. I feel like I have to be in the position where my curiosity has to come first. And if it's not, then I feel like this is where I'm losing myself in this work. So yeah, I feel like it's a very long, twisted, untangled answer I'm still trying to navigate from as I'm, you know, wrapping up my current season and working on my last season. But needless to say, it's very exhausting work. I enjoy the communities that I have been able to connect with. I feel like I've gained so much tremendous friendships that do not feel transactional to me, whether it's with my guests or audiences. But I think in the end, I think authenticity is part of my care. because it's also recognizing that if I feel uncertain and if I feel this place that I'm not safe in, then this is kind of where I need to take my pauses. This is where I'm going to need to figure out, well, where can I get to my authenticity again?
Yeah. Authenticity is hard when, you know, there's a lot of everyone, I think, is struggling with this, with the content creator age we're living in, where, you know, from the suburban mom to the urban high school student to the person sitting in Congress, that phone is your connection to the world, and you can do that through Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, all these different platforms. But oftentimes what we post is not always our authentic self. It's something that we think, you know, someone else will like. And so I think that that's an important message you have there is, you know, especially for a lot of Asian Americans like ourselves who are making our way up into this weird digital public virtual world that we're in. How do we maintain our authenticity? And so I think that's a super great point. And you probably, you know, we followed each other for a while, and you probably noticed that I post a lot of random stuff. Like, and that's also a Gemini thing. Like, you and I are both Geminis, but it's random stuff I really think is funny or I really like, and I just post it. And some people call it, excuse my French, but shit posting. But it's like, why is shit posting a concept? Like, if you want to post something because you like it or think it's funny or whatnot, you know, why should you have to go through that whole cycle of am I going to get X amount of likes, or is someone going to comment on it and say like, haha, this is hilarious? It's like, I don't really care about that anymore. And it's a little bit of, it's been a little growing in my part is, you know, if I want to post a funny video about a cat, you know, I'll do that without any consideration of like, you know, is the mayor going to see this, or is the is this popular podcaster who follows me, are they gonna see it? Like, that's not part of my calculation and my thinking and processing anymore, because for me, I think we lose that in having expecting public personas, podcasters, writers, authors, and even politicians to be this white clean slate presented a certain way to the point where they're not human, and the only time where they seem kind of human is because like their chief of staff or their producer told them like, you should go to do this, you should go to this bar, and so that people know that you're someone that they will grab a beer with. Like, I think that is, as consumers of content, like, I think we bite ourselves in the foot by expecting that as well. But I think a lot of it's changing because the digital stuff is relatively new. So, you know, how have you tapped into sort of your humanity and, you know, showing people the multiplicity of who you are besides podcasting and besides being in the public? Sort of like, you know, do you share like, what types of things you like to eat when no one else is looking? Do you, you know, post about, you know, recommendations of like awesome places to go to Chicago or like hobbies? What do you like to do to like to recharge, those types of things?
Yeah, I love this question because when I post, my first thought is I'm not preoccupied by how many likes is this going to get or how my friends are going to receive it, because I can tell you that I've had many episodes where I have interviewed certain folks that have done incredible work, but it doesn't get the metric that it deserves, right? And so it's more like, you know, F it. I just want to post whatever the F I want because it's authentically me. I want to be, like, as a Gemini myself, I love to share. I love to share things that I've experienced. And, you know, I'm not there to change people's lives through my Facebook or through my Instagram or TikTok. My goal is to just be my authentic self by just posting what I like, what compels me, and what am I curious about, and what am I envisioning myself doing. So I'm inviting you into my space, you know, and if you want to step into my world, here's my journey. This is where I'm at. But I'm also trying to do this to collect my own diary in some ways, because I know that like a couple of years ago, my grandma passed away of dementia, and it's certainly something that lingers with me, because what happens if I am forgetful of things that I can't remember? And I'd like to be able to have certain things that can really remember certain aspects of my life that I haven't given space for. And, you know, as forward thinking as I can be, and forward moving as I am, especially the way my world moves, which is quite fast, I like to be able to have these pauses and be able to reflect and be able to look at memories of my friends. You know, things that I really enjoy sharing. I love going to concerts. I love to travel out of town when I can. I love to eat at different foods. Like, you know, today I just made like several postings, one for my podcast. I had one about my graduation photos by the lakefront that I did.
I saw it yesterday.
Yeah. And I actually really wore, yeah. Oh, thank you. And I actually
Who's
wore
a photographer?
Her name's Sylvia Gonzalez. She's a good friend of mine. And I also brought Janet Jackson's headpiece from her tour 30 years ago. So I was wearing that.
I was wondering what that was.
Yeah, although that thing was, the wind was knocking out of my head a few times. So it was not a very pleasant photo shoot, I must admit. But, and then I also took photos of my friend and former podcast guest, Cole Jindeka. We were having Lao food, and it was also happened to be Songkran, which is, you know, Khmer New Year's, Lao New Year's. It's a big celebration in the Southeast Asian community. So my social media has been very busy lately. And not to mention, I also like to read a lot of books as of late. And so my social media account is, I've kind of been joking around to some people, it's like, it's turned into a book standing account. I swear to God, I did not plan for my social media to be a book standing account as well, but it, so far it kind of is, and people are responding to it very well, which, you know, I'm very thankful for. And I'm grateful for people's interest in it, because if anything, it gets people interested in people's work that I like. And some of them happen to be people that I know that I'm supporting. So, you know, I wish I could have the impact of Oprah when it comes to book promotion, book marketing. But, you know, I think just being authentic is just not giving a damn of what you post. You know, I know I shouldn't be saying this, but I remember I had a job that was trying to restrict my social media account and telling me that I shouldn't post because it's going to affect their organization in a way. And I'm like, well, I feel like I have enough of an understanding of what I can and cannot post, you know, but I think that when you have capitalism being involved, it gets very tricky, and especially when it affects who you are as a person, what you want to share, and also who is being associated with it. So it gets to be a tricky line. It's certainly something I've had to learn. And once I was out of that particular position, I felt like I was free all over again. I can, you know, share things that compels me to tap into my curiosity. So yeah, it's a tricky world, but I know that people are tired of social media. Sometimes I'm frankly tired of it, but I can't seem to live without it because it's been my gateway to the community. It's also my gateway to knowing what's going on in the world. I don't watch much TV to begin with, so this is kind of where I figure where I'm hearing about what my friends are doing and what events to go to, and what can I also share from my end? What can I contribute to in this digital media world? And, you know, a lot of folks will say that social media is an enemy, you know, but to me, I think it can also be a good friend too. It could be a pain in the ass sometimes, but it could be a good friend as long as you establish boundaries, as long as you start to establish a level of expectations of what you want it to do for you and what you want to do with it.
Yeah. And one of the things, it's a tool. It's a tool in our toolbox. And you know, I talked in one of my former episodes that, you know, technology has just progressed so fast that we haven't really, have we as humans acclimated to it? And there was a funny statement in a obscure, kind of obscure television show, Hulu, called The Orville, which has Seth MacFarlane and a bunch of other people. And the one of the characters said, I think it's technological progress and societal ethics have to go forward at the same time, have to be in line. And I was just like, wow, I just talked about that in one of my podcast episodes. But one of the good things, we can go on and on about how bad social media can be and all those types of things. But one of the things that you hit on was it's been a way of creating community, and in a way for the Asian American community to also find each other across hundreds and hundreds of miles. And your podcast is exactly the example of that, because you've connected important people in the Asian American community, or people doing work that wasn't really talked about, or things of that nature, with other Asian Americans and people, allied community members. And so that's the power that social media has had, is like following the Atlanta shootings and Stop Asian Hate. You saw a lot of Asian Americans reaching out to each other and starting to build a network that was beyond just our pockets, of, you know, California or Virginia or Chicago or Lowell, Massachusetts, or up here in Little Maine. And so talk to us about how the community that Asian Americans found and what you have seen growing and what excites you the most about this sort of Asian movement and wave.
I love the fact that Asian Americans are creating, or Asian Americans and Asian diaspora folks are creating their own platforms now, platforms that did not exist for us several years ago. I think that's the first big step we're seeing. We're seeing different Asian American podcasters, TikTokers, Instagrammers, and they're not just talking about the Stop Asian Hate or Asian American history, or which are so darn important, but they're also talking about the joys of being Asian American through cooking, through food hopping, do gaming. And there's a sense of community behind that, because we're not just a monolithic experience. We're not just one part of the, we're not a single narrative of the Asian American experience, that we are able to present different variations of it, and that we are beyond the representation matters work. I get annoyed with representation matters because I feel like it's such a surface level way of saying, oh yeah, here's an Asian person in to a movie and ta-da, there's representation, this person gets an award. No, I feel like we are pushing beyond that because it's not enough. We need to be stakeholders. We need to be able to make, to have agency in telling our stories. So that is certainly something that I feel has been so powerful the last couple of years, especially since COVID, that we are setting goals. We are setting the table for movies, film, media, publishing, and so forth, to be in front of people and also to be accessible to our own community. I feel like that's been extremely encouraging. Do we have ways to go? Absolutely. I mean, we're still facing racism. We're still facing inequities in different parts of the working sector. But I'm encouraged nonetheless.
Yeah, the racism will you know, largely be there for a while. I think something people should understand is that racism doesn't disappear overnight. It doesn't disappear over 5 years. It's so deeply rooted in the systems and structures and in society and in daily life that, you know, even if those took, you know, a few years to put into place or a decade to put in place, it takes much longer to deconstruct mm-hmm. and to take those things down and to build something new. And so, but in the meantime, in the now, in our lifetimes, we can move that along, but also celebrate the small wins and Asian representation and Asian American community building and power building, movement building. Those have seen a lot of small wins in the grand scheme of history and the legacy of racism and xenophobia that's been in this country. Like the small wins that we've had in these last few years are important to celebrate as well, because celebrating, as you and I both know from the Cambodian community, from the Vietnamese community, from great atrocities that our folks, our people have experienced, celebrating, commemorating our ways of healing and ways of resiliency. And so I'm glad to talk a little bit about and celebrate sort of your work, your podcast, but also using that as an example of how Asian Americans have things to celebrate in our communities. Mm-hmm. You did touch on a little bit of a subject that I do want to go out into a little bit, is as Asian Americans, you know, become more visible, become more public, become and fill in spaces, whether that's, you know, winning the Globes or the Grammys or making it as an actor or elected to a position or becoming a published author or getting a master's degree or PhD, there always comes the questions of, you know, humans are not limitless, and you know, burnout is a reality for many activists, many community organizers, and many people at all levels. And so your pause, your upcoming pause for the Bon Me Chronicles, which, by the way, is like, it's a well-deserved pause. It's not, it's season 8. That's a lot of seasons, mm-hmm. but I think it's, you know, everyone needs to take a step back but I think you're right that burnout does hit all of us at some point. And how do we manage burnout? And what do we turn to help manage burnout? And so this really is a message for many of our fellow Asian Americans and other people of color who are in the spotlight in some way or form or are creating content or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
What are the things we can do to take care of ourselves, to engage in self-care, to, you know, prevent burnout, is my first question. The second question is, When we experience burnout, what is your advice, or what have you found that works, you know?
I think the first part of the question, I think recognizing or giving opportunities to have reflection in your work, because it is so easy to continue to march forward because there's so much in front of us that we want to, that's dangling in front of us. There's all these fruits that are hanging off the tree and we're excited, we're hungry. There's like all these oranges, there's these apples, and we're just trying to grab what we can. But we also have to recognize that that momentum is not going to stay with us the entire time that we're trying to grab all these fruits and vegetables. And so I always encourage folks to have some pauses to reflect. What went well for you? How do you feel? I think asking yourself, how do you feel? Not how do other people feel about your work? I think you have to frame it as how do you feel personally after all of this? You know, do you feel good about your relationship with your audiences? Do you feel good about your relationship with your guests? Do you feel good about the work that you're doing? You need to ask these questions. So in order for you to have a better idea of or barometer of how you're going to approach your work moving forward, because there's so much to obtain, especially when you're a solo creator. And I'm a solo creator myself for the past, since the beginning. And I don't have many people telling me that you need to have a check mark or that you need to have, that's giving me the check oil engines light. You know, no one's telling me that I need to stop. But for the burnout, for that second part of the question, I've experienced this like about the end of I think it was the second half of 2021, and I was working on season 6, and I was going through a very difficult year because it was one, the extension of COVID was in full force, and I was in grad school, I was working full time, and I was doing my podcast without really taking any rest. And when I would take a season break, that break was actually to schedule appointments with my guests. So I remember going through a very difficult quarter of school and spending the entire summer just working on season 6. Mm-hmm. And I think somewhere along the line, there were some very deeply heavy stories from my guests that were very traumatic. And I think it just wore me out. And I just knew that I don't know if I can continue moving forward. You know, that was how bad it got for me. So I decided to say, well, maybe I'm going to need a couple of months off. You know, I think this is what I'm going to need. And it gave me the opportunity to, I think just even putting that out to the universe is very helpful, because your mind shifts like, okay, you know what? I only have a few episodes left until break time. And we just need to learn how to manage my time and get through the season. But once I got through the end of it, it felt liberating to have that break. Now, burnouts, everyone experiences different levels of burnout, whether they're very frustrated with their own creative input or output, whether they're, you know, just not finding any capacity, they're beyond the capacity of doing it, or they're forced into doing this work and feel like they just can't let down their audiences or they can't let down their employers or whomever that is a stakeholder or who they feel is a stakeholder to their work. But I think anytime you experience burnout, you always have to ask yourself these questions, like, how can you make yourself feel better from this? How can you be in a good place? What is your safe space? What is your good place to pause, you know, forget about the work? What feels right to you, right? And are there things that you can give up, that you can pushed aside and say, you know, this is not my priority. Mm-hmm. We have to be able to surrender certain things that are no longer useful to us. And that's hard to do. When I was working on season 8, my current season, and I took a 6-month hiatus, mind you, and I felt somewhere along the line when I was doing my interviews, I was like, gosh, I'm just not feeling the same kind of energy like I used to have with my work. I feel like I have given myself some rest. I have been more intentional about my boundaries, but I just felt creatively exhausted from my work. And I had to ask myself the question, do I want to continue? And I had to answer, I want to continue for one more season. And I think that will be the end of it. I think this year will be the time that I will transition into something different for 2024. So, I think when you realize that you do need to have that pause, I also had to ask myself the question is, how do I transition gracefully from this work mm-hmm. and into doing something that might, and also remembering to tell myself that this is not a failure. This is not because I was tired, that I was just, burnt completely toasted, but that this is also a beginning for me, that this is a new opportunity for me to get into something different. That this chapter has been a blessing, you know, and this has been a great opportunity. So I had to tell myself that just because I was stopping the podcast doesn't mean that I'm broken. You know, and it just meant that I am ready for a new opportunity. Mm-hmm. So I think that's what I would tell other people, is that if you're starting to burn out, just remember that you have other opportunities to explore, but you need to rest first. You need to be able to say that quitting is not failure. Quitting can also be a good thing. Mm.
Yeah, and it, maybe it's not even quitting. It's sort of like there's a season for everything. And things that grow, that you sow and you grow, are things that, you know, are eventually harvested or foraged or picked. And oftentimes, you know, you have to figure out, are you the person that's going to keep this going? Or maybe, you know, you've built something and now you've handed it off to someone else, mm-hmm. carry it forward, or maybe it's time for something new. I think that, like we talked before, you know, I think we a lot of the what a lot of people call boomers or people who, you know, from the 1950s, you know, they had the economy was very different back then. You know, a lot of union jobs, a lot of mm-hmm. manufacturing and different types of jobs and job security. And so the philosophy back then was, you know, find your job, stick to it, work at that one place for that one employer until you retire, and retire in peace and get your kids through college. And sort of that was sort of like the American dream at the time. But is that necessarily human? Is that, you know, how we should live? All of us should live? Granted, some people find their thing and they can stick to it, and it's something that brings them joy. You know, the people that do Olympics, like for me, I see them as people who do the Olympics who have had to train their entire lives to reach that summit. And so that's their entire lives. But I think there should be rooms for multiplicities of existence. And for you and I, you know, our calling in life isn't just to do one thing and do it forever. And I'm speaking to a fellow Gemini here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have boundless, endless curiosities. We want to try new things. We want to experience new things. We want to learn new things. And I think that life and society gets a lot of value from people like us who are constantly innovating or finding new things to look at things or do things. So, so that's what I'll add to what you've said before. And I know you said you're going to take a pause, you're going to take some time to reflect, but you know, are there things that you have been interested in that you've seen, that you sort of peak with curiosity and you're still like, I want to be interesting to learn that or be interesting to do that. You know, have there been a lot of moments like that as you've been in the public more, and sort of name some of those curiosities that you have?
Yeah, it's funny how you asked that question, because I have been thinking very heavily on that the past 2 weeks. When I was looking to end the podcast, my fear was, is there anything that I feel like I'm capable of doing that I feel would have some level of impact for me? But at the same time, allow myself to keep my curiosity going. Another thing I've been looking to explore, and I haven't made it official because I feel like there's still plenty of time. I would like to start my own newsletter. I would like to maybe start a Substack account, because I find myself liking Substack. I read Michael Moore's Substack. I have a friend of mine who loves sharing Substack accounts from different political beat writers. And I just happen to love that format, because writing is something that I enjoy doing. I also want to keep interviewing people, but I want to interview folks beyond just the Asian American experience, even though they will always be my priority because it is my community, it is where I belong to. I want to talk to other BIPOC, other marginalized communities that I have not got a chance to hear from. I would also like to be able to focus on my writing, one, to make it more accessible to people who are deaf or hard of hearing, because I do have folks that I know who are in that community. And I'd like to find, I don't know if the newsletter work will be as less intensive as the podcasting work, but my goal would be to make it as less exhausting while still achieving some level of impact and curiosity. So that would be something I'm looking to explore.
Yeah. 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 I did. I think I did respond yes to that, or liked that story. I forget.
Yeah.
Whether it was on Facebook or Instagram.
Yeah. Thank you for that. Because I wonder if people are actually going to read. I mean, it kind of goes back to my imposter syndrome again. It's like, well, people actually want to read through email? But then I realized that there are plenty of people that would want to read it, you know, go in that direction. But I also asked myself that same question several years ago. Would people want to listen to a podcast? And as I continued to go on, there were people that had never listened to a podcast that became audience members. So, you know, I feel pretty confident that I can just take them along that journey.
Yeah. Yeah. And the thing is, like, even though you're bringing this to, you brought it to fruition and you're sort of winding down, you know, there's always that saying, people say it's a Greek proverb, but I think it's something that's familiar to a lot of people across cultures, is, you know, old men who plant trees that they know they'll never sit under or enjoy the shade under. And so by starting this podcast, you planted this tree, and a lot of people get to listen to it and rest in its shade. And so a tree doesn't takes care of itself. The eight seasons you have is that tree that's there, that's always going to be there because it's the digital platform and it's stored up in the cloud or in the servers. So I imagine a lot of people who listen to a lot of your interviews and a lot of your episodes will take something from it and carry it forward. And so that's another thing that was interesting to think about as you were talking. Thank you for being who you are and for starting a podcast, for growing, you know, trees that in our age, you've gotten to see this tree grow and you get mm-hmm. to see people sitting underneath that shade. And so, thank you for doing the interview. Thank you for catching up, and everyone, please go check out the Bon Me Chronicles on Spotify, Apple, and all of your favorite platforms. But also, I know Randy has his public personal social media platforms as well under Randy Kim, and so I'll link to those as well in the episode details. Randy, thank you again, and I really had a good time catching up.
Thank you, my friend.
Hey, it's Marfine again. Thanks for tuning in. As a reminder, please like, subscribe, and follow on your favorite podcast app or platform. And you can find me on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter at Marfine Chan. Look for the spelling on the podcast page. Until next time, have a good one.